am going to get started with announcements. First thing is VBS registration opens today. And it has a history of filling up rather quickly. So you might want to go online and do that if you're interested in having your kids come. I don't know how many other churches do VBS, but I believe River West does one of the best. It's super fun. Yeah, so the dates of it are June 21st through July 1st, and it's from 9 a.m. to noon, and your kids need to be 5 and older. And if you are interested in volunteering, you can do that and just let them know that you have kids that need to be in childcare, because they also work that out too, so that people can volunteer even if your kids aren't old enough. Or if you have a kid who's old enough but you also have a baby, then you could still come and help out. So, that's that. We have one for sure new baby today. Kristen had her baby Everett. Yay! Finally, she was rejoicing. We were all rejoicing. Is there anybody else here with a new baby? I know we're maybe going to have one other, but she's not here. All right. Okay, so those are my announcements. Oh, I also just wanted to thank you guys for all of your prayer. I know Amy announced about Zachary having his heart surgery, and I just want to let everybody know that he's doing fabulous. It's actually really amazing. Yeah. So, yes. Thank you. It is such a huge relief, and I just can't even believe how well he's doing. So, and he's downstairs, and today's his 5th birthday. So, yay! He is. And we are really, really celebrating. This is like such a big year for us. So with that, I'm going to bring the guys up. Thank you, guys. So, and we've actually never met, but you must be Matt, because you're the only one I don't know. Okay, Matt. And then Tyler. And Ryan. And Eric. And they'll tell you a little more about themselves. But they are our man panel today. So let's give them a huge round of applause. Because we so appreciate them. So I'm just going to pray really quick, and then Amy's going to come up and we'll get started. Lord, we just thank you so much for this morning and that we get to come together as moms and learn new things. And especially thank you for these men being willing to come up here and just share their own insights and perspectives on parenting and husbanding and just life. I just thank you for their willingness in their hearts, and I pray that you would just speak through them, calm any nerves they might be having, and that this would just be an encouraging morning for everybody. It's in your name that we pray. Amen.
So, these are the expert men in Lake Oswego. Is that true? Yeah.
I'll embrace it.
All right, thank you very much. Okay, so before we get started with questions, which, by the way, these questions came from you guys, so thank you very much, and you may get an opportunity to ask others, so if you have some brewing in your mind, hang on to those for a second. But the first thing I'm going to do is just have the guys introduce themselves, and they're going to tell you who they are, who they're connected to, and what kind of kids they have. What kind of kids do you have? So, so we'll start with you.
My name's Matt York. I'm married to Jamie, who's in the back. Some of you may know her. We have 3 girls, Addison, who is 10, Presley, who's 8, and Ruby, who just turned 5.
Tyler Combs. I'm married to Lindsay. We have 1 2-year-old girl and 1 that's cooking in mama's belly. Yeah.
Ryan Schleiper. I'm married to Tamara. We have Hannah, who's 2.25, and Deacon's due in 2 or 3 weeks.
Oh. I'm Eric. I am married to Anne Marie, who works here, maybe some of you know. And then we have 3 kids, Judah, who's going to be 6 next week. Finley is 3, and then we have a little boy named Nash who's 9 months old. Very
cool. So is this a good representation of the homes that you guys live in right now? Pretty much? Really quickly, can you just tell me, what's your occupation, Matt?
I sell medical devices.
All right.
I do real estate development.
Awesome.
Civil engineer.
Pastor.
All right, so we run the gamut. Woohoo! Okay, so I told the guys that we're affectionately calling this morning men. They are not women. And our idea was to just kind of get into their heads a little bit and think about how they think, which clearly we're not going to solve in the next 45 minutes. But we are just going to try and delve into kind of how they think about different topics. And so the first question I'm going to ask you guys is, what do I want to start with? Okay, how about this one? Do you need a break when you get home before you are bombarded with the kids? And if so, how long? Whoever wants to jump in, go for it.
I don't always do this, but I sometimes I sit in my car. If I need a break, I sit in my car before I go in the house. Because I think it was actually one of the dad training things at church where someone was talking about how important it is for you to be on when you come in the door and are the reinforcements. So I really try to do that. I know my wife will say that I don't always do that, but I try to really make that time special when I come in the door. So sometimes I have to sit holding my steering wheel. It's like, you can do this.
I pretty much do the same thing.
I love it.
My schedule is a little weird because I work from home, so a lot of times I'll be, you know, back and forth and during the day, and my kids are older too, so I'm not a traditional sort of. I'm sorry.
We're taping it.
I'm not a traditional 9 to 5 away from the home kind of guy, so I think I do okay at. You know, greeting everybody when I come in and saying hi and being excited to see everybody, which I am. But then it's a challenge for us because then I have to, it's work time. I have to be able to go in my office, close the door, and get real work done. And so, you know, I think over time my kids have realized that and we do a great job. But it is a challenge to sort of, I'm sure guys that leave at 7 o'clock in the morning and get home at 6 o'clock at night, that, you know, I'm sure they need time to land the plane before the kids, you know, jump into their lap. I'm sure it's a challenge.
I have a kind of similar thing. I don't work necessarily like a 9 to 5 each day. So it is, yeah, I agree with all these guys. It's a mental shift that you have to do maybe on the drive home. But, and then we have really little kids. So sometimes I walk in the door and my wife, who loves me a lot, greets me by just handing me Nash and says, here you go. I think we've kind of learned that that's just part of the deal. And it's great, so.
Okay, well, let's stay on the parenting topic for a minute. What's your favorite thing about being a dad?
My favorite thing about being a dad would probably be the way that my daughter runs up to me and, you know, just with pure excitement and joy. It's really unlike any other feeling that I get ever. So it's hard to really describe it, but it happens every time she sees me. And she's not obviously 13 yet, but I hope that it lasts for as long as possible.
I kind of have a really pragmatic personality, and I really like to problem solve and fix things and work on things. So I have to rein it in sometimes, but she's only two, but I like the thing that really gets me excited about being a dad is just being able to invest in her life and really develop her into someone that loves God and loves other people.
Well, for me, I have a little bit older kids than the other guys on the panel here, and I think my favorite thing about being a dad is just seeing the impact that you make over the years. I mean, I've gone from having, you know, little babies crawling around to now a girl that's going to junior high next year and all the sort of challenges and, things that come along with that. And, you know, being a good dad makes a difference, you know, being there. walk in those tough times with them, partnering with their mom to help them through difficult things. It's, you know, sometimes it feels like a thankless job, as I'm sure being a mother feels like a thankless job a lot. But it's, you know, it makes a difference in your kids' lives. You see the character, you see the things that they've taken from what you've modeled to them, and it's very rewarding.
I think all those things are awesome. One thing that I'd add too is just the shared experience that you get the older your kids get. You begin to have some of these really special moments, like with my son, like playing baseball together. You know, the older, the baby stage is amazing and awesome, but I think a lot of dads would say that the older your kids get, the more unique opportunities to do things together happens, and that's awesome. Because great conversations happen in that, and yeah.
So fun. Okay, so the other side, what's the hardest part of being a dad?
I think that the pressure, I think, like, if you do just even, like minimal research, you'll realize that your relationship to your kids is probably, well, I'm going to say the most important relationship that they'll have, and as part of their development. And so, like, just recognizing that and hearing kind of, I guess, the horror stories of the dam, you know, you realize really early on, man, this is really important, and I don't want to screw this up. And so I think dads carry that weight differently, but hopefully we channel that into, okay, this is an opportunity to have an amazing relationship with a little person that will hopefully grow up and follow Jesus. So I think that that's sort of like the best part and the hardest part is, like, this is a big thing. So
I think just specifically challenge of a dad that works is the having to come in the middle of a situation, or, like, you know, the kids have been having a certain attitude or dealing with certain challenges, and you feel unplugged. And so it takes a little bit of time to plug back in, figure out what's going on. And that can be really challenging, you know, like walking in and trying to figure out how to handle a situation that requires some sort of discipline and not being sure if this has been an issue that's gone on all day or not, or whatever. Just is, it's sometimes I feel like I have to live in two different worlds, and switching between them is pretty challenging.
Along that line, it would be, I've noticed at times, like when I'm working a lot, I'll come home, and the aspect of us, Tamara, being a single parent for, like, several days at a time, because I've been getting home really late and not really being that much, having that much time with her when she's awake, and then, like, the weekend will come and we'll have to go back into co-parenting mode, and it's just like me and Tamara butt heads more than me and Hannah butt heads, because we're approaching a situation just slightly differently, but enough for me to be like, I know how to do this, you know, and her saying, You're right. You do know how to do this. So, but not often. But that can be challenging.
Yeah, that totally makes sense.
For me, I mean, Eric mentioned the pressure, and I think, you know, in my particular family situation, my wife is a stay-at-home mom. So there's the pressure that Eric talked about of, you know, just how much impact you're going to have on your kids, but also just the pressure to provide, the pressure to, we get so locked up in these, you know, sort of in our own heads about the sort of lifestyle that we're supposed to provide for our wife and our children, and it can create a lot of pressure, you know, probably brought on ourselves. A lot of it probably doesn't come from our wife or come from our kids. But, you know, that pressure's real, and your husbands are feeling it if they're the primary breadwinner in your home, for sure. I would say the second thing is just the exact same thing that makes it hard to be a mom is just the constant nature of it, right? You know, It's nights, it's weekends, it's all the time. You never cease being a mom, and dads never cease being a dad. And until your kids are grown up and gone, it's a job that's 24 hours a day around the clock. And so that's, you know, that's challenging for both parents.
I appreciate that. I like that. So how do you approach helping your wife with the kids? Here's some clarifiers. When she asks, when you see she needs it, proactively, and why? Let me just say that again. How do you approach helping your wife with the kids? Do you do it when she asks, when you see she needs it, proactively, and why? This is a very, like, in-your-head men question, so go for it.
Always and immediately.
Instinctively, every time.
I think me and Tamara kind of have fairly, I don't know, don't want to call it roles, but like just through repetition, we figured out that like when I get home, I play with Hannah while Tamara cooks, and I pretty much, I try to, for the most part, be 100% Tam or Hannah at that time, and then try and do a couple little things to help. And then after dinner, we, you know, Isla, sometimes, you know, I do the dishes and stuff, and Tamara takes her, and then after that, I do bath time and bedtime. So, like, for the most part, because we only have one right now, we have this kind of, you know, machine going. Yeah. I have a feeling everything's going to change soon. But
yes.
So as of right now, you know, we have, you know, it's not that often that she has to be like, you know, especially during the week, she has to tell me to get on it.
Good training.
My wife has to tell me to get on it a lot. Partly because I can't really turn off my work. I own my own business, so I have an office, but I also work from home a lot. And so sometimes I'm on my phone or on phone conversations, kind of, especially if I come home a little early, I have to kind of navigate that. And so it's been an interesting role for me to kind of really take direction from my wife. So it's like, you know, I really am in a supporting role. And so I kind of depend on her to tell me, here's what I want you to do. Here's what I want you to, you know, feed the child. Here's what, you know, so I take directions, which is not what I'm used to, but I try to embrace that.
I like it.
That's a great point. I think that one of the most helpful things in marriage is just to communicate, hey, this is what I need. And for husbands, I think to really like humbly receive that. And I think dads, a lot of times we really are trying, but sometimes I could say for myself, I can be kind of aloof. I'm like, oh yeah, there's the third baby. So I think that communicating that for, I guess what I would say to moms, to dads is really helpful. And us humbly receiving that is the important part as well.
Okay. Mr. York.
It depends on the day, for sure. Sometimes, and, you know, frankly, a lot of it depends on where my heart is, whether I'm, you know, sort of walking it with the Lord in the right way that day. I'm just a better dad. I'm a better husband, better father, more responsive to my wife's needs, more responsive to my kids' needs if I'm not wrapped up in myself, if I'm not wrapped up in what's going on in my life in that moment. So that's really important, I think. I think to Eric's point, there's this aspect of we don't always see the same things that you guys see. You guys are with the kids more than us typically. You see things throughout the day that, I mean, you know, your intuition, your response times are just vastly beyond what ours are ever going to be. So I think making it clear what the expectation, you know, you know, how can we help? Making it clear that, you know, it hurts my feelings when you sit there when the baby cries and just look at me.
Well, that's funny.
How about,
that's actually on here. Do you default to your wife when the baby is crying? And if so, why?
Yes.
You default to your wife.
I always did. I mean, we don't have babies that cry anymore. We have
you have 11-year-olds who cry.
We have a 5-year-old that cries every day. Yeah. And at this point, you know, usually the best response is to ignore her when she cries. That's the best parenting move we can make. But are we ready to segue to that question?
Because I think, you know, you guys especially, I mean, we got a lot of, do you notice that we have a lot of new babies in the room?
I do notice that.
So,
beautiful kids.
Yeah.
I would just say, again, not to just regurgitate the same answer that I just gave to you, but, you know, your instincts as a mother when you hear the child crying are much different than the instincts of a dad. And I don't say that, you know, sarcastically or pejoratively or anything like that. It's true. I mean, you guys have a mothering instinct that wants to nurture, that wants to take care of that child. We have that, but we have to be brought along in that a little bit. And so again, the importance is the communication and the, you know, sort of the ongoing dialogue that has to happen that says, look, I know you work hard all day. I know, you know, I'm taking care of the kids. And this is just assuming you're staying home with the kids. If you both have jobs, then there's a whole nother dialogue that has to happen is how do we divide, you know, sort of child care when we're both home from work and it's, you know, we're on. But I think that ongoing dialogue about what expectations are and how we can love one another by how we respond to our kids can make, you know, an enormous difference in your relationship with one another.
I think Matt touched on something very important, which is we have different skill sets and things that may seem very second nature to you, especially with infants, seems like rocket science to us. So I think a lot of frustration can happen when you're like, the baby's crying, it's obvious that it needs a diaper change. Why aren't you taking care of it? And sometimes it's not as obvious to us dense men. So just give us some grace. And I work really well with direction. So, hey, the baby's probably crying because it's hungry. Go get the bottle, you know, then I'm on it. But I'm probably not going to be as quick if I have to do more detective work.
In the beginning, Hannah was breastfed, and I would just be like, whoop. The second, I would just make the auto, because the first, it felt like 3 months. Every time she cried, she was hungry. Like, because we have the diapers with the little stripe on them. So I knew if she needed to be changed, because the stripe would turn blue.
Technology's come a long way. Yeah. I mean, I never had that when I was
into diapers. But as she got older and now, if she's crying, she doesn't cry very often, and we're very lucky. But if she does, she typically hurt herself, and so then I actually I want to be that, you know, I want to, you know, make her feel better. And if she's misbehaving, that's a whole other different sort of, you know, deal. But we try and. Whoever's closest to her has to deal with that. So,
part of my family dynamic is that my wife works outside of our home part-time here at the church. So one of the things that comes along with that is and that's been the case our whole marriage. Is that she's worked here part of the time. Is that the case with some of you too, where you work part-time? So I think that creates a dynamic of a lot of communication about what it looks like to partner with together, even in the baby stage, is really important. But I think sometimes the communication between about what that looks like can be kind of like, hostile when it's in like the moment where it's really intense. And so me and Anne Marie have tried to have conversations outside of like a crazy moment of like, hey, here's what I need you to do for Nash tomorrow when I'm here at the church for 5 hours. And so I guess that's what I'd say is I think a lot of that comes down to communications and husbands feeling encouraged that like, you can do this. And yeah. Nobody's going to die. That helped me a lot because I was super freaked out, and I was also really young when we had our first one too. So
that's actually a good segue, because the next question was, what is your biggest fears as a father? What do you fear the most? So not the hardest, but what are you afraid of?
That I won't be able to provide. Mm-hmm. I've always been like that, just like super, I mean, I would like to think so, penny pinching type of philosophy on spending money. And so I have a lot of anxiety about that. And it's not that my job necessarily is, you know, super stressful all the time, but it has its moments. And like, I can have a hard time of like dropping that at the door sometimes. So, and it totally shows. And it's very important for me to not do that. And I understand that. But if I am bringing that anxiety home about, you know, I can't sleep sometimes, and I definitely have a much less patience. And so, that's probably by far my biggest, the fear that I deal with the most. I mean, there are bigger, longer fears that will happen later, but that's the one that I deal with the most now.
For Ryan, that's certainly a fear of mine too. That I'm not going to be able to play one of my primary roles in the family, certainly. But I think as my kids get older too, and make more and more of their own decisions, and you have to sort of let go of the reins more and more with each passing year, there's fears that they're going to make decisions that are really going to be, you know, terrible decisions that could have, you know, life consequences, most especially for us, a decision not to follow the Lord and a decision to find their hope and their meaning in life in something else besides a relationship with Christ. And so that's certainly a fear that that we won't have that ultimate transcendent reality in common. Those are very real things.
Yeah, I think that latter one is my biggest fear. It's just that at one point or at different points in our child's life that she will drift away from us or drift away from God or drift away from other healthy relationships. I think I think human nature is to, you have good times and you have bad times, but to have to walk through that with your children, as a parent, I think brings a whole new, level of anxiety.
One of my big fears is, so I'm a pastor, and my dad was a pastor, so I hadn't planned on it, but I kind of went into the family business. And I felt a lot of pressure as a kid growing up in that environment, not necessarily from my parents, but kind of the scrutiny that came from that, whether it be at school. And also along that, a lot of kids who grow up in with a parent who's a pastor and that kind of ministry end up not following Jesus because of the damage that can come from that. So that's on my mind a lot. And so what does it look like for us in our family to really be followers of Jesus, like outside of the role that we play at the church, is really important, but it's also, you know, terrifying as well. So that's something that we go through in our house.
So we're going to take a little bit of a turn from super serious to something that we've talked about. I don't know who's going to answer this, about what are you doing about cell phones with your children?
Not letting them use one.
Well, we're just sort of wading into these waters right now. I mean, none of our kids have a cell phone, but we have a 10-year-old who probably 50% of her class at school has a cell phone, and probably 80% has either a cell phone or an iPod Touch, which is, you know, an iPod Touch allows you, that's Facebook, that's the internet, that's texting, that's voice over IP calling. You can use WhatsApp to call on an iPod Touch, so on and so forth. So I guess there's a couple angles to take here. Number one, I'm not anti-cell phone or anti... There's a lot of good reasons to be very wary about bringing that technology in that in the home, but technology with the right heart behind it is a wonderful tool. It's amazing. It allows you to see where your kids are and, you know more about what's going on in their lives, allow them to communicate with other people in amazing ways, and it's truly amazing. So the technology is neither here nor there. It's not evil. It's not good. It's just neither. I think the question is where is your child at that specific time in life, and are they ready to have a portal into the outside world that's capable of taking them to places that none of us in this room can imagine in terms of what it can deliver right to your doorstep. And that's a huge concern for us. I don't think we have a decision in mind. There's not an age that we've got in mind that's like, okay, when she's this age, she can have this. I think it's an ongoing conversation regarding, you know, where she is in her maturity, how that would work within our family, and all those sorts of other things. But I think one other aspect of it that we've had these conversations with her, and I think it's important to have with your kids as soon as it's time, is just like, you know, there are going to be things that we do in this family that are different than the culture around us. That's just, you know, that's just part of our family. That's just part of who we are in loving the Lord and living our life for Him. And there's going to be lots and lots of things that come up that the culture around you and the kids in your class and at your school are going to think is just fine. And they're not going to be part of what our family is all about. And one of those things maybe at this moment is a cell phone or an iPod Touch. I mean, yeah, everybody has them. That in and of itself is a terrible reason to have one, just because everybody else has one. So
that's awesome.
Okay. I would add, obviously our 2-year-old does not have a cell phone, but I'm a geek, so I help my friends that have older kids kind of navigate some of these things sometimes. There's a app on, at least for iPhone, I think Android is coming soon, called Our Pact. And so if you have kids and you want to have a little more control over monitoring cell phone use and when not they can use it, Our Pact is like one of the highest rated softwares in the App Store.
Awesome. I need to write that down. Okay, let's go to talking about your wives or how you think or about wives. So let's see, where should we start?
Squirm a little bit.
I know, because your wives are in the room. Well, I'll give you an easy one. So what's your favorite topic of conversation with your wife?
My dogs and my daughter.
I love it.
Mostly the dogs.
My wife will probably find this very funny, especially because her nickname for me at certain times has been the Dream Crusher. But I think my favorite topic of conversation with her is dreaming. And I think there's I read a study that was talking about how the power of talking about your dreams with your significant other and creating a shared meaning in your life. And even if those dreams aren't realistic or never come true, it's still a powerful bonding experience. So,
we talk a lot about our next vacation. Yeah.
Which isn't happening soon, but we'd like to talk about it as part of... kind of makes us feel better. It's like, remember, or we're going to go to Hawaii like in 20 years or something.
2021. Well, I'm fortunate to be married to a great conversationalist, so our conversations kind of run the gamut. But I think that's a great answer, Tyler. There's nothing more fun than sitting down with your wife with a glass of wine or whatever you do, and just talking about the future, talking about what you think life might throw our way in the next 3 years or 5 years or the next vacation, maybe dreaming about, hey, where could we go? Where could we take our kids? Where could we escape to by ourselves?
I'm not taking our kids on that one.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Where could we get away to by ourselves? But all those things are just extremely healthy and bonding, times with your wife.
Okay, so what's your ideal date night with your wife? The G-rated version.
We would eat at Porqué No, and then in Southeast Portland, and then go see band play, probably. We'd probably stay at a hotel.
We like to watch a lot of movies, and we like to go on group dates, which is kind of... We've talked about it several times. It's like, do we need more time together, just ourselves? And sometimes we do, and it's good to, I think, when we are planning a date night, we have that conversation of, is this one we want to do with some friends and kind of get out of our shells as adults, or do we want to just kind of round the wagon, so to speak, and focus on having some intimate conversations? So we kind of take a test of that, and then kind of decide what our date night we want it to look like.
Probably going to eat maybe in the Pearl, and then walking around afterwards with a babysitter. I mean, with our daughter.
Walk with your babysitter.
Daughter at the baby with a friend.
Bring her along.
I do.
My wife is almost 9 months pregnant, so there would be wine or alcohol involved, probably.
I don't know. I mean, I think for us, we're discovering more and more that it's important that it happens at regular intervals, not necessarily the specifics of what we do. I mean, sometimes we stay in Lake Oswego and get a cheap dinner and go sit at a coffee shop or something for a while. Always got to make sure you stay out at least late enough to make sure the babysitter has all the kids in bed, even if you have older kids. I mean, what are you paying somebody for? You have to put your kids to bed yourself. Or get grandma and grandpa involved or whatever you do. It's really special when she plans something, that I just know there's a date on the calendar where I come home and we're going to go somewhere. And I think it would be probably really special for you guys, for your husband to plan something too and just say, hey, block out time in your calendar. So to me, the specifics aren't as important as that it becomes a ritual in your life that you both invest in and both take the time to do.
I'd add to that, if you want your husbands to plan something, picking the date for him and giving him some options would be very helpful.
There was a follow-up question here. I'll confess to you, Jamie and I have never been very good at it until just probably more recently, like in the last, I don't know, several months, maybe 6 months, something like that. And I don't know, remember what it was, why we started making the commitment. Maybe she... we've always spent time together, but when you have kids, sometimes we don't want to pay a babysitter. Let's just have a movie night at home. That's not the same. It's really not. Somebody gets tired and they're like, I'm going to bed. And you're like, okay, well, SportsCenter's on. I'm going to stay up late and watch. And it doesn't turn into a great connecting time typically. I think that I would say at least once a month. I think we're working on every 2 weeks, and we're not doing great at that. Although some of them, some things are like group dates. Like we went to somebody's birthday party the other night, and they'd rented out a nice space and like a restaurant type of thing. And it was awesome because we had a little time before, a little time after, just a ride in the car. For you guys, a ride in the car with no kid in the back, that's got to be awesome.
So here's a question. how do you wish your wife saw herself?
Not sure I understand the question.
Same.
I mean, this is going to sound cheesy, but I mean, I want my wife to see herself as valued and beautiful and cherished. And I think one of my selfish reasons for wanting her to feel that way is because, especially having a daughter, she is going to be a huge, have a huge impact on our daughter and how our daughter views herself.
I would say obviously beautiful and appreciated and not taken for granted. Just that I that I really do, understand how much stuff that she does, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I feel like every once in a while I can tell when she's not feeling that way, because I'll say something that can be taken two ways, and it's taken not the way that I intended it to be taken. And so I never, ever mean it to be like that. It's always, I've always appreciated what she does.
I think that there's a lot of pressure on moms for a number of reasons, whether it be Instagram and Pinterest and things like that, that the home looks a certain way, maybe that they look a certain way, and which I'm sure you guys experience. But so I guess my hope for my wife would be that I treat her in such a way that she feels valued. That stuff's always going to be in your face, like what other families are doing, what other women are doing, what their houses look like and things like that, but that I treat her in such a way that she feels really valued apart from whatever the rest of the world or even our friends are doing. So, yes.
I think I agree with what all these guys said about the specifics of how they wish their wives see themselves, but I think it's really important that probably the biggest contributor to how you see yourself is your husband. And I think it's okay to probably tell him that, just like, in these times when you've had a baby and it's, sometimes it's, you don't always feel beautiful and everything you have has puke on it. And, it's probably okay to say, you are in a really important contributor to how I see myself, and just opening up that dialogue to how much what they think of you means to you. I think that's probably okay.
Okay. So here's a question. How do you suggest couples with young children handle hobbies, golf, fishing, hunting, etc., so that one parent isn't always alone parenting on the weekends?
So the women are really angling to go hunting and fishing on the weekends here, so their husbands are nagging them about having to stay home all the time.
Kiss them goodbye. I'm joking.
I guess I'll start, and just confession time. I haven't always done this the best, especially early in our marriage and when we had little kids. I had a wife who chose to be patient with me, rather than she's just never been the personality type and the type of person to nag me or to say, hey, or to keep score or to... and I'm super thankful for that. And I think the Lord used that much more than he would have used her nagging at me, because it just, that may have created bitterness between us and may have, been a negative impact on our marriage. Instead, she sat back and let the Lord do his work in my life, which was sort of the precursor to me saying, wow, my wife needs me around when I want to be on a motorcycle trip, or my wife... or my kids, would like to see me on the weekends. And so I said that to say, it's a difficult balance, because these things are important to your husbands, and they are things that, to a degree, within balance, you should encourage in their lives, that these are the things that get them away and make them feel refreshed and renewed and will allow them to be a better husband, better father, in your home. but at the same time, dialogue about how it makes you feel if they, you know, if they just take off and go hunting for the weekend without even asking you or not even discussing it with you. You know, I think it's just okay to say, hey, but that hurts, you know, and it's not fair, and we need to talk about how we're going to work this out, because I want you to go hunting. I want you to have time with your friends, but I want it to be in balance with how we're raising our kids and us time too.
One of the things that, and this is sort of unfair, I don't hunt and I don't fish and I golf very seldomly, but I know that we kind of consider the weekends like family time. Almost, I want to say 98% of the time we're doing something together on the week or on the weekend. And that's mostly because my biggest hobby is fantasy football, and that can be done anywhere. But when I do like to do stuff with my friends, and they're all mostly in my same stage of life, we try and do it during the week, like out, you know, like at 7 or later. So that way, you know, I can go get a drink with friends. I can go watch a game. I can go play Halo. I can do all that stuff. We just do it. Me and my friends just do things typically in the week after our kids go to bed. And I think that it took a long time for that to happen because, you know, different people handle things different ways. But once the people that I hung out with started to realize that that's, you know, like we all just kind of got on the same schedule type of thing. So.
Some hobbies are more, like hunting's, there's hobbies of different, like hunting is often like a weekend, multiple day kind of thing. And then there's other hobbies that maybe just take a couple hours. And so I think that finding a balance of, like, I don't hunt, I'm not like super manly. It's just the ultimate reality. So I don't like kill any of the stuff that we eat. Which is one excuse I think that husbands could use. I'm feeding us. So I want to say a couple things. So I think that it is possible that there are hobbies that are maybe distinctly like, there's things that I like to do that Anne-Marie will never like to do. And then there's things that she likes to do that I don't like to do. And that's fine and that's good. So I think scheduling and communicating about that, like even just practically, sometimes if you put out a calendar and you say, you're asking to be gone 4 weekends in a row, do you see that? That can be helpful, I think, for guys and women as well. Just to see it, like to schedule it, to see it. And so just having conversations about what it actually is looking like is really helpful. And then I think the other thing that people don't do as much that they should is bring each other into their hobbies. So, like, me and Anne-Marie play City League softball together, which we've done for a few years, and it's like baseball's my, like, it's like Jesus, husband, dad, music, baseball. And and my days are way gone, but we just, like, and Anne-Marie actually played as well, so it was like we found out, okay, this is something we both love, so let's do this together. And we kind of, we're both competitive people, so we love doing that, or running and things like that. So you find some things that you both love, and you say, well, let's invest in that. Like, let's put time into that, because we're going to grow together, and our kids are going to get to see us doing something fun together. And I just think that a lot of couples don't go there, and I would just encourage you, I guess, wives, to tell your husband, like, let's find something that we can do together and invest in it, because it's, the payoff is huge. So
I would, for us, Lindsay and I were snowboard bums for a while. That was one of the things that brought us together. We really liked to snowboard. We did it professionally for a while, and when we had our kid, it just was one of those things where we kind of agreed to table it for a while until they're old enough to do it with us, because just trying to both go up on the mountain for, it's a all-day activity, to find babysitters for that is just, you know, you're not going to get up there very consistently. So there's some hobbies I think you just have to kind of say, for this season in our lives, we're not going to do that as frequently. And then I would also say one other thought is that sometimes when you do have hobbies like Ryan's fantasy football, or I like to play video games sometimes, just because they're home doesn't necessarily mean that that's okay to do it all the time. That, you know, you still, it's an important conversation to have as spouses, to say, okay, you know, how much time are you spending on these activities? Even if you're around the kids, are you present and doing stuff that you are considering investing in their lives?
Here's one that I know everyone wants the answer to. Why are men so obsessed with hot sauce?
I didn't know we were.
I didn't either. I didn't either.
I put hot sauce on my hot sauce. So I think it's awesome, is the answer.
Okay. Does anybody have any questions before we get done? We could probably take like two or three questions from you guys out there. Does anybody bravely want to ask something from the audience? Oh, come on. That's a great question.
Sometimes I slide towards that way of thinking, and then my wife says, here, I have an all-day event at church or something, and here, take the kid for a day. And then I quickly realize that that I'm glad that I go to work.
I was going to say, I recently, well, this is, I've known this for a while, but there'll be like something on Facebook, and I have, for the most part, bits and pieces of my day where I can just like, okay, 5 minutes, I'm going to walk down the stairs, I'm going to come back, approach work again, or, you know, it's lunchtime, I'm going to watch some YouTube videos at my desk for a few minutes. And I come home, and I'm like, did you see that? And she goes, no. And so, like, she has much less time than I do, and our daughter still naps, and she finds stuff to do, and I, you know, I ask her not to do it, and then she says, well, when will it get done? And so I say, touche. But it took a long time. It took quite a while for both of us to adjust to our new roles. I want to say it took me 6 months when we had our daughter to kind of, like, understand that I can't come home and play Xbox for an hour anymore. And it took my wife at least 6 months to cope with the fact that, you know, that she was not like a professional in the sense of the word that she saw herself being for so long. And I really had to, you know, it took a long time for us to just meld, like, it, you know, just because I said something didn't mean, I was never trying to point out that she did not make money. Like, that was not what I, you know, that was never my end goal, but oftentimes in the beginning, that's what she thought, because it was a really sore, you know, she gave up a lot to be a mom, and I understand that, you know. Yeah. It just didn't, my communication skills can be very poor at times, so.
I think that it's, if you have two people that are communicating value in what the other person is doing, then you're headed in the right direction. And so for me, you know, my role is to communicate that I really value what my wife has been doing all day, or if, and because that switches sometimes, like maybe she's here working for a few hours, so, or that she was home with the kids all day some days. So I think if you have two people that communicate that I really value what you do, then you're headed in the right direction, and I think that oftentimes we're waiting, like I'm waiting for my wife to do that for me,
rather than doing that for her. And I think she'd probably say the same thing. So I think that I would encourage you all to do that, like to really just speak value to your husbands about what they're doing during the day. And I would say that to your husbands if they were here, I guess, but they're not. So I think that if we just take a personal responsibility, it's like, I'm actually going to value what you do and kind of speak into that and encourage that. And when you create that kind of atmosphere in your house, and sometimes it's one person leading the way in that, sometimes it's another, then things change. That's been our experience. So just in not waiting for the other person to do that, but actually doing that is really important.
And I would piggyback on that, saying that it's really powerful if you can implement that with your kids, of saying, I've caught my wife like praying for my day and telling, like praying that she, with our daughter, saying we're thankful that daddy's going to work to provide for us. And then me doing that with our daughter as well, say, you know, telling our daughter how thankful I am that Lindsay can, you know, take care of her, that kind of thing, I think is really important to model to our kids.
Yeah, go ahead.
They are not women.
So did you guys hear that question? So what baffles you the most about the way your wife thinks? They're baffled by the question.
I don't even know how to put it.
Baffled by the question.
I don't even know how to put it into words.
Yeah.
So I would say it's one of the things that we kind of squabble over is the fact that how much, like, I'll come home and Hannah will have worn three or four different sets of clothes. And I'm like, why do we need a new pair of pajamas? And she goes, well, she wore them. And I'm like, and I wear the same pair of shorts every day for 2 weeks when I go to bed. So that's just, I don't know. Difference in our daughter's wardrobe.
This isn't the biggest thing, but I'm baffled by my wife's, the decorations are always changing. The decor. I'm like, I just hung that picture like last week and we agreed, we loved it. I thought we were going to love it for more than 72 hours. So that isn't the biggest thing, it's something.
I don't know if I would call it baffling, but I'm astounded that she's willing to do what she does. I mean, the fact that she, stepped out of a successful career to chase three little girls around all day. It's an enormous sacrifice, and she loves every minute of it. I mean, it's hard, but she loves it. She feels like it's what she's called to, and I could never do that. I could never do what you're doing right now. I mean, just standing there rocking a, you know, like choosing to do that all day, every day. Just, you know, that's baffling. Yeah. Looks like fun.
I'm astounded by my wife's negotiation skills with our 2-year-old. I negotiate for a living, and I just especially recently, just trying to get our daughter to choose what to wear, I throw my hands up in the air pretty quickly, and so I'm realizing how good of a negotiator my wife is, and I'm starting to suspect that she's using those negotiation skills on me without me knowing it.
Yeah, one more question, Kate.
Prayer
tiny question. Okay, so what does prayer and spiritual leadership look like in your family?
Jamie and I, I think, have a this is not necessarily just me. This is us together, but we pray together every single day that I'm in town. And we try to, even on the days when I'm traveling. And that's something that just kind of knits our hearts together on a daily basis, that draws us close to one another and, you know, is sort of the catapult into our day. There's several commitments that I've made some have stuck, some have not. I mean, I think one is we endeavor to have a family meeting. We try to do it every week, but it doesn't work every week. So it probably turns out to be every other week or every third week or something. But we actually have a family mission statement where we have sort of written down the things that we're all about as a family and the things that are most important to us as a family. And for me, encouraging those meetings, participating in those meetings. And then I've sort of made a commitment to do a family-led devotional once a week with me, or a daddy-led devotional once a week, which I think I've done only like twice out of 4 weeks since I made the commitment, so I'm already doing terrible. I think more than anything is modeling to your kids what it looks like to pour into the lives of others, of each other, you know, how you behave as a dad, how you react to them, how you control your anger when they do something that's out of line or that's wrong or that just gets under your skin is super revealing about your own heart and just, you know, builds them up and shows them what it looks like to have godly character and godly motivations in your own life.
Would you mind sharing your family mission statement?
I don't have it memorized, but I would be happy to. I mean, it basically, we've recognized that we're all five extroverts, and that our relationship with Jesus is at the very core of who we are as a family, and that we want to use those attributes to make a difference in our community and in our world for Him. And so, you know, sort of the two verses that we have sort of put. Is it Matthew 6:33? Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, and all these other things will be added unto you. So, in everything, we endeavor to put those big rocks in the jar first, which means Christ, and just let everything else sort of fall where it may in our lives. And then the other one is, I believe, is Proverbs 3:23, 3, 5, and 6. Sorry. Trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not into your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge Him, and He'll make your path straight. So those sort of define, and then we sort of go through, and on a maybe every couple months basis, we make a bullet points of what does that mean in our lives where we are right now today, the season that we're in, the activities our kids are doing, where I'm at work, I'm in a season of a lot of travel right now. So how does it manifest itself for us to be living godly lives when I'm gone a lot? So I would be happy to share it with anybody that wants to see it, though, and wants to see, you know, read it word for word. It's probably not a very good mission statement if I don't have it memorized.
Sorry to put you on the spot. Yeah, okay. I was just so intrigued by that because that seems like such a powerful thing to keep your family aligned.
Yeah. For us, Hannah's two, so she's just starting to discover Jesus and God, and what we do is we pray every night at dinner, say what we're thankful for, and, you know, pray for Deacon who's coming soon and stuff, and then before bed we always have a little prayer where we say what we're thankful for, and the biggest thing, though, I think, is just leading with grace. Like, I just really try to always use a level head, and I don't always accomplish that. I'm not perfect by any means, but especially when dealing with, you know, specifically her and her mother, doing my best to, you know, give her lots of chances, you know, before we, you know, give her the chance to do the right thing is what we try to do. And she does good for the most part. And actually just recently we started reading a kid's Bible before bedtime. And right now it's mostly looking for animals. But she really is starting to, like, you know, talk about Jesus. And, you know, she goes to preschool here right now. So that is another thing. She sings little, you know, songs and such. So, but, yeah, just starting the conversation is what we've been doing.
Yeah, I think the praying just regularly and not putting a lot of pressure on what that looks like is really important. Like, just accepting that my daughter thanked the Lord the other day for her leg. And I was like, well, yeah, that makes sense. So like, making prayer regular but not putting pressure on it to be deeply spiritual or whatever is something that we try to do. So at the dinner table, a lot of times everybody wants to pray. And so, okay, that's good. And then whatever comes out, unless it's super horrible, we don't really correct. And then we read, there's a Bible called the Jesus Storybook Bible, which I think is fantastic, because what it does is it takes stories maybe that we all heard growing up, but it actually shows how those stories reflect who Jesus is. And so that's been really helpful, I think, for our kids to see, oh, like, the story of Jonah is points out to us what Jesus is like. So, and then we praying together regularly at night is really important. And then I think just trying to interject in the car ride something like, hey, what do you guys love about Jesus? Which is, that might sound super spiritual, but it's really, it's just, what do you guys think? And then having a dialogue about that. And I really love what you said too about grace, because I think one of the ways that we can show our kids what Jesus is like is by apologizing to them and seeking forgiveness, because it really is the heart of the Christian faith, is that God has accepted us when we weren't worthy of that. And so trying to create that culture in your family, even through practical things like somebody hit the other person, and like creating an atmosphere where forgiveness happens and is received, is, I think, one of the best ways to do that. So,
all right, let's say thank you to our men, shall we? Woo-hoo!